So here we are at Brighton Fringe, at Fringe Review headquarters, which is Pavilion Gardens Cafe, of course. I'm joined by Gregory Gudgeon and Lisa Wolf. And I'm going to express a preference here, because in a Fringe where less and less smaller venues are present and the big ones are just gathering everybody in, we've also got some conversation here about the Onca Gallery and why you chose that too. But Gregory, tell us about the puppet King Richard II.
Well, a puppet King Richard II is, as it says on the tin, a puppet version of Shakespeare's King Richard II, which is the tragedy with comic elements of the fall of someone who gave himself too much power, really. It's about regime change, and it has no fool in it, unusually, for a serious Shakespeare play. And I figured, well, maybe the king is the fool. So I do it as a kind of white face clown with red hair and old gloves for puppets, working up to some lovely hand-carved marionettes at the very end of the play for maximum pathos, because by the end of it, we've got to try and get a bit of tragedy back. It's a puppet show for 14 years and up, I would say.
And Lisa, there's always a story behind how these things make it to the stage, and if anyone followed your biography, you know, you don't just get involved in basic plays with, you know, rows of seats and the stage. You've always explored different venues, different forms. So how did this one come about and your involvement in it?
I went to see it last year, Onca, and I was drawn to it because I like the look of the publicity. I like the look of Gregory's face on it. I've never seen Richard II before. And, yeah, a huge pull was the fact that it was in the basement of Onca. I did know it had one, a little yard outside, but I'd never seen it used theatrically, so I was keen to see how that would work. And it works beautifully, the way they create a prison out of it and a cell out of it. And what it does so dramatically is bring the audience together into the show. So it's fairly interactive, but not in a scary way, and the storytelling is really powerful.
So you are immersed in this venue, but how did you come to know it and have a positive relationship with it in the first place?
Well, it's very interesting. I belong to a mailing list for a separate organisation, and they somehow carried an item about a mutual friend who worked at Onca, a filmmaker called Lillian Simonson, and she had been there, and I think Onca had said, well, we're trying to find a use for this yard. It's not just a yard, there's a coal hole as well. And the play, I set the play in the prison that Richard II ended up in at the end of his life, at Pomfret Castle, where he was murdered. So we were looking for a sort of dank, rather spooky, out-of-the-way place, and we found it. And then we were blessed with some medieval smells as well, because there's a very old drain there, and so we dressed that with bay, and we had sort of smoking herbs, and so the audience get a kind of olfactory experience as well as it. I mean, we've sorted it. It's fine now. It's just a very atmospheric. We've put an awning over it for weather. And it's a nice place to sit for an hour and a half.
And tell us about how this was directed by Linda Marlowe.
I've worked with Linda for many, many years. She's one of the best, as well as being a very fine actress, she's one of the best directors I've ever worked with as well. She's an eagle eye for what's interesting, what's true, what's valid in your performance, and what, you know, she believes in. And so I couldn't think of anybody better. She's also done 6 solo shows, some of which have been to Brighton before. She's a unique person, a unique performer, and I trust her. So we asked her to come on board and give us an idea of how we could make this show into something that's tourable, because you can't always count on having a beautiful space like the Onca Yard, and that's what she's helping us with now. I've worked for about 30 years. So.
And when we stage theatre, you know, even when we're improvising, there's a kind of script that emerges. Even as we're talking now, I'm noticing my right hand starting to gesture. As you answer the question, your hands were gesturing. So they are lips and eyes and communication devices. And so for you, what happens when you add gloves to them?
Very interesting. I contain myself in the doorway to the old coal yard, so I'm quite fixed for the first half of the show, and it's a bit like a Punch and Judy show, but you become very aware of how your joints work and how, you know, puppets have to work on either side of you, because if you cross arms, then you can't get your hand sort of back maximum to keep them standing upright. I came up against a lot of physical constraints. I have to say, not many of which I've been able to overcome at my age. But the puppets take over, I think, is what tends to happen. And then if that happens, they have a life of their own, and you just follow it.
What's that like, looking from your angle?
What is so beautiful about it is that, you know, with all due respect, Gregory is not a highly trained puppeteer, and I find puppetry done really, really well slightly painful to watch, actually. What I loved about this was it's done initially with a huge amount of playfulness, and then as the tragedy looms over Richard, and in the second half, whilst we're still handling household utensils, that the puppets have grown in stature. The puppet of Richard is almost as big as Gregory, and it becomes more refined, but it never becomes sort of pompous, and you're not asked to believe that there isn't an actor holding it. You know, you look at them both at the same time, so you know it's stage theatre. The puppet's not a real person, but it does embody some of the emotions, and it helps articulate the story.
And if we look at royals around the world, and of course our own royals, and then into history, some royals, some kings, queens, princes have been the puppeteers, and some have been the puppets. So there's a real opportunity here to use that metaphor, I guess.
Yes, I would love to really investigate that. I believe that the play has elements of puppetry in it. In fact, there are lines about gilded loam and painted clay actually used by characters in the play. I thought, well, bingo, that suggests to me that he is thinking of puppetry in a wider sense. Who's pulling the strings? And behind the scenes in this play, there is a character called the Duke of Northumberland who is definitely a kingmaker. And we know from the newspapers what goes on. We're seeing a lot of it right now, you know, about the use of our own personal information to change events, or to be exploited in the change of events. And I think Shakespeare's onto that 400 years ago. So definitely there's that element of who's in charge here. Is it me? Is it the puppet? Is it something beyond that? Is it a force of some kind that you can't put your finger on? What's going on?
And Shakespeare obviously gives us lots of clues about who Richard was in terms of the script. But then there's a director who probably needs to research the historical Richard. And there's you, clearly not as just a passive performer who's learned a script and is directed. So how has all that research coalesced around what we see on stage?
Gosh, it's a good question. Well, I was invited in Prague to do a one-man show, and the director of the Prague Shakespeare Company said, why don't you do Richard II? And it happened to chime with me, because when I was at drama school, that was the character I was drawn to for a one-man show and had never pursued it, never followed it up. But there's something very attractive about him as a person and as a political figure. He's tragic, and I think we like tragedy in this country. I think we're not drawn to overly optimistic themes in this country. Sometimes, you know, obviously, and the royals need optimism to kind of make all of that work. So I wanted to research him as a person in me. I wanted to see what have I done in my life that I had big plans for and then didn't work out, and how have I crashed out in the past, and who have I been supported by or not supported by at that time. So it's very personal to me, and I even cry real tears, you know, when actually it's the puppet who's going through it, or not me.
So as I encourage you to take a sip of your tea, Lisa, I was interesting, you said it's kind of simple in a good way, that you like this, so that's why you're the producer of it. But over the times that it's played, do you like it in the same way, or has that changed over that time?
I saw it that time.
Really?
No, because it's I saw it towards the end of the run last year, and until yesterday, they haven't done it. So I haven't had the chance. So I shall see it again for the first time on Friday, the 11th. although I have watched a bit of the rehearsals with Linda. So I'm going to be as excited as any other audience member to see how it's changed over that time. And I enjoy seeing things more than once because, you know, a lot more, you're digging beneath the surface a bit then.
I've asked this a lot and I get different answers, but as you put the white face paint on and start to inhabit this character, and, you know, to be believable in whatever way that is for an audience, what is your ritual for being Gregory Gudgeon having a cup of tea here and then actually being on stage?
Well, the strange, dark, dank space of the Onca coal hole, the cave they call it, helps there, because we have a big candelabra in there. I light the candles. I kneel down on an old tarpaulin, so my nice shell suit, purple, royal purple shell suit that I wear, doesn't get dirty with the lichen and the sort of mould on the cave floor. And I don't know, I ask. You mustn't tell anyone this. I mean, really, it's so personal, Paul. Please don't tell anyone.
So I'll move the microphone away.
I ask for the lunacy of the play to inhabit me to some as much as I'm capable of getting that.
And that is, you know, that's been suggested by some actors, that to do it I have to be possessed, and I don't quite know where that force of possession comes from. Is there a danger that, you know, and in Shakespeare, that ultimately sends you into a place of madness?
Yep, Guy in Prague, who commissioned this in the first place, he said recently, I don't know if I can go through playing any more of the big tragic parts. By, you know, Macbeth, he's done for many, many years, and he says it is really exhausting. I haven't got the energy to run a company and play that on a nightly basis. Perhaps I need to move into character parts, and, you know. So I think there is definitely, well, they're powerful pieces of work. You know, they aim to grab you by the guts and remind you what being human is all about. And it's not safe. It's not health and safety, Shakespeare. It's dangerous stuff.
And it's really important to know that I'm really happy if you answer this, I've no idea or I don't know. But for all that you have picked up clues about the historical Richard II, if Richard II's spirit was alive in terms of being self-aware and stepped down those steps to the cave, sat at the back or wherever they could hide a little bit and watched your puppet King Richard II and then came up to you afterwards, what do you think Richard might say to you?
He'd say, down court, down king, for night owls shrike where mounting larks should sing. And then he'd say, I think I got some of that, but I think I'm much nicer. Or, I like the red hair, but you should have had it dyed properly and not used kids' face paint in it. I'm not as pale as that. I'm much taller, and I should have ruled for longer.
Finally, what do you love about it?
Oh, I just love the whole experience. I love not knowing who's coming to see the show. I love that we put the audience in serried ranks for the first half of the show, and then we rearrange into a circle, and then the audience start getting hold of some of the puppets, and one or two of them, you know, actually participate in the show if they want to. There's no obligation, and then there's sometimes the pitter patter of rain on the awning. Not very often. We're promised nice weather. The smell of the Onca garden at the back, and just being outdoors doing a lovely play, and then. And kombucha, at the which is a nice fermented drink with not very much alcohol in it, which is what they like to serve at Onca at the interval.
And these different venues in the fringe, these unique venues that have eschewed the large hubs that are selling beer alongside art, are the ones that I encourage you to try out this year's Brighton Fringe. So, Gregory, thanks very much for talking to us. Lisa, thanks very much for talking to Fringe Review.